Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, content manager at the Institute, and in this podcast, we will be looking at news from the week beginning 13th of May. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Rod.
A recent Sky News report highlighted the role that UK bosses can play in the rehabilitation of former prisoners. Preston-based Recycling Lives processes e-waste and scrapped cars, and since 2012 has helped hundreds of ex-offenders to get their lives back on track. Its CEO, William Fletcher, comments, "The ethos of the business is different. We're here to focus on commerciality, and we are very keen on having an entrepreneurial way in how we do business. But at the same time, we want to put back directly into the community. And for us, it was a very simple idea to think, actually, one of the best ways of doing that is in the rehabilitation of offenders." He adds that offering great employment opportunities for people who are willing to work hard means that in return they get incredibly loyal employees, which then helps our business to grow. My question, Kate, is, could the private sector succeed in an area in which the public sector appears to be having little impact?
I think it's not so much a question of sector, it's the willingness to make these schemes work and an understanding that a lot more is required than just giving ex-offenders jobs. They come from a different world, different relationship with the world of work, and therefore need different sorts of support when they're in their new jobs. So we're not all starting in the same place on day one of a new job. And recognising that that support has to be ongoing, that there has to be an understanding of the difference, a tolerance perhaps of while they're learning, is that that contributes to the success. So it's trusting that people can change and make a contribution that's certainly worthwhile and one that they feel is important. In return, you get that loyalty that's been mentioned. But what it really is about is understanding that employees have different needs, especially when you're trying to include groups that wouldn't traditionally be in your organisation. So I think these initiatives are really laudable. But as I said, I don't think it's whether they're done by the third sector or the public sector, it's the willingness, the understanding of those running them to do them really well.
Okay, thank you very much, Kate. Now, our second story concerns the home entertainment brand Richer Sounds, which has switched to an employee ownership model, entrusting 60% of its shares to its staff. The hi-fi retailer, renowned for its socially conscious ethos, The Richer Way, announced the move in a joint press release with the Employee Ownership Association. Brand founder Julian Richer is stepping back from his day-to-day running of the firm, with a management board picking up most of his work and a colleagues' advisory council comprised of current employees will represent staff interests and concerns. Kate, what should leaders take away from the rationale that Richer has advanced for his firm's restructuring?
For as long as I've been involved in leadership and management development, the problem of what to do with family businesses when the founders want to step down is a recurring one. And I think Richer here has come up with a fantastic solution. I think it's about legacy. He doesn't want to sell the company to a big conglomerate. He wants it to continue with the ethos and the values that he's established, and he's recognising the loyalty of those employees who have been with him for many years, making it the success that it is. We're doing some work, actually, some research with the University of Birmingham, and looking at particularly at the growth of family businesses and the particular challenges of succession planning, especially when younger members of the family perhaps aren't interested in working in the family business. So this, I think, offers real hope to so many family businesses where they're keen to have leave a legacy, to keep the business running, that employees' shared ownership seems a really exciting opportunity. And of course, as I've said, such a reward for the people who've worked there for years and now assuming that ownership role, similar to the John Lewis model. We do see that there are increases in this sort of organizational structure, and let's hope that they continue to increase, because early evidence is that they're very successful.
Our final story asks, what can leaders do to fix capitalism? A recently published report from the Institute for Fiscal Studies entitled Inequalities in the 21st Century claims that only one in six people thinks capitalism is currently working well in Britain, and more young people have a favourable view of socialism than of capitalism. The IFS are not the only commentators with this conundrum on their minds. Another is business philosopher Charles Hamden Turner, who, with Professors Fons Trompenaars and Linda O'Riordan, has penned the forthcoming two-volume book, Capitalism in Crisis, What's Gone Wrong and How We Can Fix It. Capitalism, the authors note, is not freedom assured by some divine global mechanism, but a set of suppositions and rules that we have constructed for better or for worse, and that we need a moral science of economic development around which whole nations and regions can cohere. My question, Kate, is, and it's a daunting request, but what can business leaders do to usher in this new consensus?
I think we can look to the work of Charles Hamden Turner to actually provide some of these answers. He's for long been an advocate of stakeholder capitalism, recognising that everybody in the supply chain needs to be adequately rewarded for the whole thing to be a success. And that actually, if you over-concentrate on shareholder value, on rewarding shareholders for their investment, and you ignore employees, you ignore customers, you ignore suppliers, you don't pay enough attention to innovation and learning, the companies don't survive. Another thing that Charles Hamden Turner is a great advocate of is servant leadership, in the sense of all of us serving within an organisation a greater cause. So the role of the leaders is to help everybody serve that greater cause. And you'll see that most where you've got great alignment with the values of the organisation and the values of the people who work in it. And this, like we've seen with Richer Sounds, this recognition that we have to reward people for the contribution that they make, and that has to be a fair and equitable reward. And I think probably one of the crises that has occurred in capitalism is extraordinarily high rewards to very few. And that is causing a crisis.
Thank you for that, Kate. I know that the Institute's been out and about this week running conferences. Are there any highlights that you'd like to share with us?
Yes, Rod, absolutely. We ran a conference last week looking at resilience and the importance of resilience for leadership and what that actually means. Not only the behaviours that might go with that, but also the neuroscience. And then this week, we've been at Barclays running a conference, again, looking at the future of leadership. And I think what particularly struck me was Dr. Nicola Millard's contribution. She heads up Customer Insight and Futures at BT. And she was talking about the office of the future and how offices have become such different places. Rather than places that we go to work, they're places that we go to communicate, to collaborate, and the offices that we're all becoming used to, loads and rows of desks in big banks, are actually not terribly useful places if you want to contemplate, you want to concentrate, you want to get things done. And BT are doing so much work in this area of innovation, connecting people in workplaces of the future. It was really fascinating.
Thank you, Kate. And that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again for your insights on these stories, Kate.